Meanwhile, in New Jersey...
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, ugh, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscovered Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
And welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week we are talking about my pick, Intruder, from 1989. We had discussed this way back on the Reddit Horror Club, and I haven't really thought about the movie much since, but every once in a while when I'm looking for great kills for my horror compilation, this movie comes up time and time again, and boy, does it have some great kills. But is it worth the full watch for them? Listen and find out! Scott, I know this is a rewatch for you and a first time for Brian, so I'm curious first with Brian what his thoughts were on Intruder.
What are my thoughts on
you
Intruder?
You love slashers.
Well, I do love slashers. I thought I was watching the wrong movie at first. I thought I was watching a Lifetime, like... domestic violence movie, like the first 30 minutes. It was okay. The kills were fun. The acting was subpar. So it was a slasher. I love the red herring where it's so obvious. Like if you see a guy who's so clearly a villain and then you see people getting killed, but you don't see the person killing's face, I promise you that villain is not the villain. Like with
No, 100% with the abusive ex, it's like no, seriously, he's probably the one doing the killing, and you're like, I mean, a lot of people are dying and I haven't seen him get killed, so it's starting to feel like maybe, but that doesn't make any sense for it to be that obvious. And then it's just somebody who's crazy about that store.
I'm just crazy about this store.
So this movie obviously has Sam and Ted Raimi and Bruce Campbell in it.
But the, like, very, very rare, like, very light amount of Bruce Campbell, and then he's on the fucking, like, top billing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it's, like, not shocking to me that they all agreed to be in this movie, not just because they produced it, but, like, this is shot like an early Sam Raimi movie. Like, in the same way that people have that, like, ooh, but Steven Spielberg actually directed Poltergeist. If someone pulled me aside and was like, Sam Raimi actually directed Intruder, I'd be like, I buy it. Because, like, so many of the shots look like they're trying to be Sam Raimi shots. But the craziest thing is the producer of this movie. So Sam Raimi was an executive producer on it. And then, like, did a bunch of, like, little cameo work, right? But the guy who actually produced this movie, it was his first time producing a film. Okay, you following me here?
I'm following.
Do you know what the next movie is that he produced?
No.
His name is Lawrence Bender. He also wrote the movie. He followed this film up, producing Reservoir Dogs. Then he produced Pulp Fiction. Then he produced Four Rooms. Then he produced From Dusk Till Dawn. Then he produced Good Will Hunting, Jackie Brown, From Dusk Till Dawn 2, which was directed by the director of The Intruder, Knockaround Guys, Kill Bill 1 and 2, Dirty Dancing Havana Nights, Chum Scrubber, 88 Minutes.
That's a weird ad.
I just love Chum Scrubber. Inglourious Bastards, and his most recent films have been Hacksaw Ridge, Greta, and the upcoming Capone movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That dude has gone, I mean, I don't know his name. I it's gone through my ear, one ear and out the other already, but like, that's fucking great.
Yeah, like, that is an impressive resume for your
movie. Were you actually just going down the list, or were you just doing the movies that we know?
That was just the movies that we know, but I would say that I gave you over 50% of his credits.
That's fucking insane. Yeah. That's wild.
I mean, obviously, based on most of those titles, he clearly got his foot in the door at Miramax through Reservoir Dogs and came a producer through them, but... Mm-hmm. Still, like, his name's attached to some of the biggest movies in, like, the 90s and early 2000s, for sure.
Yeah.
Dude, and Inglourious Basterds is the only Tarantino movie that I can rewatch. It's also one of the best, like, kill Nazi movies.
Oh, for sure.
And like, that boggles my mind that the guy that produced this produced that.
Yeah, everyone knows I love Quentin Tarantino, and I'll rewatch all of his movies, but I've said... over and over again that I genuinely think Inglourious Basterds is his best fucking movie. It's easily my favorite Quentin Tarantino movie.
One last note on the Quentin Tarantino thing and then bounce is that I do think that there's something interesting with Quentin Tarantino that I feel like it's been a long time for me to realize this, is that he has this weird ability to both have a very distinct style, but to make sure that every one of his movies is like a dramatically different homage to a different genre that he loves. And I think that's kind of impressive, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Anyway, Intruder. The original name for Intruder was Night Crew, which I think is a way better title than Intruder.
Oh, fuck yeah, way better. Like,
1,000 times better.
For starters, the killer's not even an intruder. He's supposed to be there. So this movie definitely bounces all over the place in tone. There's two fight scenes. I want to talk about the first fight scene in the grocery store because it is so hilariously over the top. There's like this crazy dramatic score happening, but then it's also like 1930s Western punching noises put in there throughout the entire fight scene. So it's a lot of like... You almost want, like, the Batman pals to pop up on the screen as they're throwing fists. But I think that it's worth giving credit to this movie because and we'll dive into this a little bit on our Patreon episode, but I don't know many other horror movies that take place in a grocery store. And it's like, man, there are so many interesting ways to kill someone in a grocery store.
And they don't even utilize them, like, very well, because it's mostly in this movie. I mean, I'm not complaining. I love the kills in Intruder. But there are, like, really creative ways that you could kill someone in a grocery store. And they didn't use any chemicals. They didn't use any food items. It was literally just using the stuff in the, like, the meat cutting area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you recognize, Brian, I am almost positive will not, but Scott maybe. Did you recognize the first girl that gets killed? She's the only one that I think has an off-screen kill.
No, I didn't recognize her as someone specific.
So I looked at her and I'm like, hold on a second, is that Renee Esquivez, Emilio Esquivez's sister, who's the star of Sleepaway Camp 2? And sure enough,
it's Renee Esquivez. I did recognize her. Like, yeah. I didn't realize that's Emilio's sister, but as soon as you said that she was in Sleepaway Camp 2, I basically like mentally superimposed Emilio's face over hers, and I was like, oh my God, it's like a spitting fucking image. They even had the exact same hair swoop.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so she's in this. She's...
Well, I guess I'm double featuring this with the Mighty Ducks.
Emilio!
Emilio! This movie also has some really weird... Like, when I said it's shot like a Sam Raimi movie, I wrote that note originally when it's, like, the inside the shopping cart being pushed around the grocery store.
There
shop.
Are so many. And then there's, like, the in under the rotary phone.
That
and like, this
one
is, the,
is like, weird. I was going to say I do not like the rotary phone internal shot at all.
Well, it just doesn't make sense. But the funny thing is that this movie, you're right, it's, like, very artistically shot. And the cinematographer was basically, like, give me carte blanche and I will just do, like, I will make this movie so much more interesting than in a grocery store. And it's a cool contrast of, like, the whole conceit of this movie is something extraordinary happening in a really mediocre, like, ordinary place, right? Like, crazy murders happening in a grocery store, like, a place where you would never feel unsafe. And so I feel like, stylistically, they were like, cinematographer guy or lady, whatever. We want you to make it as artistic as possible because we want it to feel like almost German expressionist ideals of, you know, like a fucking grocery store. It's super, super cool. This is only my second time watching this. The first time I watched it, I'd never even heard of it. And then we watched it for Reddit Horror Club. And that's the only takeaway that I had from this movie. Like, I forgot who the killer was. I remembered a couple of the kills, but I remember the rotary phone thing more than anything else because it's just so odd and out of place when you first see it. But then when you think about the whole point of the film, you're like, that is so clever. I mean, at least to me, I think this movie is super clever.
Yeah, I think that on the grand scale of like one and done slasher movies, a lot of them are kind of forgotten. And I'm not going to sit here and say like, oh, this is better than say Dream Warriors, or this is better than like Jason Lives, or some of these like iconic franchise killers. But like, do I think that this is a more enjoyable watch than like the original Prom Night or Terror Train or a lot of those like one-off slasher films? I think that this is still quite a hidden gem among the horror industry. Like, I feel...
Yeah, this has never gotten its like cult status, which is very odd to me.
Yeah, like the DVD that I own is from like a bare bones Full Moon Pictures release. And like,
does Full Moon have the rights to this?
I think they did at a time. I don't know if they do, but it's like, this is the type of movie that like you should have like a Vinegar Syndrome put out like a crazy double disc Blu-ray. If they're going to put out a double disc Blu-ray for Spookies, they absolutely should be doing a double disc Blu-ray for Intruder, because I think that this is one that like all it needs is a little bit of press that they're putting this movie out on Blu-ray and people are going to check it out. And I think a lot of people are going to be like, holy shit, how did I not care about, like, know about this movie? Because I think it's got that gore level where like my Bloody Valentine, which one day we'll talk about, I can't believe we've never done it for the show, but like My Bloody Valentine is one of those movies where when I watched it when I was first getting into horror, I didn't really care about it. And then maybe 10 years ago, Scream Factory was like, we're putting out the uncut director's cut with all of the gore added back in. And like watching it with like the gore, I was like, oh my God, this is one of the best slasher movies I've ever seen. It's in that range of like, what is the most in your face? We are not going to imply that something happened. We're way past that. We are showing it happen. And that's where you're getting like, I wrote down a few of these, but like the skull crush in the trash compactor, where it's like an explosion of gore. The hook in the face where it cuts to the guy just literally dangling from the hook. And then finally, the big one that's become the cover for some people, the face slice where they cut the face in half on the jawline and you're just like watching it go through. Like, obviously, it's not like it's, ooh, that looks like a real head. But it's like the implication is just so unsettling. And like, that's why I rank this so high compared to like a lot of those other one-off slasher movies.
You're selling me.
I think I would
like this movie in hindsight. Yeah.
I would kill for a blue version of this with like, because it already, I think that this movie visually holds up. Because, you know, when we watched Motel Hell, I was like, this looks so much better than the first time I watched it. When I watched the blue version, like that remaster, I feel like this movie already looks good, you know, for its time. Like it had, I mean, they used good film, you know, and good cameras. Like all the equipment was higher quality than, say, Demon Wind. But I would absolutely love to see what they could do with restoring it even more, because that would, and you're right. I feel like people don't know about it just because it's kind of scarce and it doesn't have a creature. A lot of the cult stuff has to have, we were talking about that in Motel Hell, like the cult factor has to have that one image, right? And like the image that I think of in this is when the guy is cut in half and it says half off.
Yeah.
That's such a great visual, but at the same time, you're not going to know that that's not from any slasher movie, right? Like, I think that this movie just doesn't have the little, like, you know, mental, like, that mnemonic device for people. And if we got a really nice restored version with extra features and stuff and a little bit of a social media push, from someone like Vinegar Syndrome. That would be, it would be, I mean, I would buy it. I would actually finally buy a Blu-ray player.
So apparently it has, I'm looking at the release information right now, and it's been put out a couple times, but there's been never any promotion for it. It looks like Synapse put it out on DVD and Blu-ray in 2011. And then I don't know who 88 Films is, but in 2017, 88 Films released the film on Blu-ray and DVD with bonus features, a double-sided cover art, and a restored image. And then the version that I have, I guess, is the 2019 Full Moon just threw out a 30th anniversary DVD. But it's like nothing special. So it's almost like they put it out, no one jumped about it, and then they were like, all right, just fuck it, just throw it out on DVD, I guess. No one cares. But like, no. It's I think
that's a shame.
Yeah, like, but I think that you need, like, Synapse, it's kind of like that was, no one was really getting into the vintage DVDs quite yet in 2011, but like in 2017, if that was a Vinegar Syndrome or a Scream Factory release, it would have been everywhere. They would have been promoting that as like their big summer release, and it would have gotten some head. Like, because God, the amount of attention that like Scream Factory put on like something like The Fan a year or two ago, where it's like,
what?
Yeah, like they were just like, yo, we're putting out The Fan on Blu-ray. And it's like, that is like a very mild thriller at best, but they treat those movies like they are the golden age of horror. So it's like, you need a company that's got the marketing money to make the movie feel important versus like just kind of tossing it out there and hoping for the best.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel really silly not knowing that there was a Blue out there, but
I mean, I didn't either. I was the one that was like, it needs to be on Blu-ray. And it's like, oh, apparently it was twice already. But like on companies that don't have marketing budgets to make anyone know or care that it's available. One of the things that I'm surprised Brian, I mean, we've been kind of talking all over without letting Brian even get a word in. Brian, how did you feel about the long drawn out shot that just led to an unflushed turd joke?
Oh, A plus. Just with the acting of his face when he realized that he was looking at Dookie was mwah.
As soon as that scene happened, I'm like, well, got to bring this up for Brian. So do we have a favorite character? We were talking about, we recorded the Spookies episode Pothead. Just before this. Is that the guy?
Really? He's so annoying.
He's such a bad actor because he sounds...
His character is the one that I wrote the most quotes down from as well. Because it's just like this nasally obnoxious voice. Like, yeah. I just remember the one line I wrote, and it's not even like a particularly funny line. It's just the way he says it is when he asks Dave for something and Dave gives it to him. He's like, got it. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Like everything that he says sounds like he should be a cartoon character on a 90s action cartoon.
Yeah.
Like he'd fit right in on like Street Sharks. But
I was thinking him working an elevator as a dog. That's what I pictured him as.
Oh my droopy God. Dog.
Yeah.
Going down. So I actually, a friend of the show I was texting the other day, Robert Bacon, because I was watching the Mighty Ducks animated series on Disney Plus.
I hope Megan doesn't listen to this episode and find out that there's more Mighty Ducks.
No. The Mighty Ducks animated series is without a doubt the most insane attempt at making an animated version of a famous movie. Because the Mighty Ducks animated series is about a team of alien ducks who like to play hockey but also fight in space battles.
Are you selling me on this idea now?
But I was texting Bacon because I was like, can you think of an easier job in the world than writing for a 90s Saturday morning kids action show? Because I feel like you just have to write the one script and then you just sell that exact same script to Mighty Ducks, to Street Sharks, to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Because it's like, kids are dumb. They'll watch the same premise of an episode four times if it's four different characters doing it.
Hell yeah, dude. Like, remember Arthur and his Knights of Justice? That was my shit.
Dude, I mean, even like, imagine writing for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in the 90s, where like, all your job is to watch an already shot show, write maybe 5 pages of dialogue for the American actors to read when they're not in the suits, and then just like bring them into a studio and be like, can you say ooh like, we just need some voiceovers for every time you get punched. Easy money. Easy money. And that's why that show is still producing new content like 30 years later, is because it costs nothing to do. I agree with you. The stoner character, best character for me.
No, dude. I loved Ted Raimi. I literally could watch Ted Raimi make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and I'd be happy, because that dude is just... He just has this like little goofy smile that he does for all the time. And he's not a good actor. Like, he's literally, he just plays Ted Raimi. And it's just so charming to me. I love Ted Raimi.
Speaking of Peeny and Jays, I converted Jade this week.
Uh-oh.
Because I was making a sandwich. I was going to make a peanut butter and jelly, and I just wasn't feeling it. So I was like, I'm going to make a peanut butter banana sandwich, Elvis style. And she said, that is atrocious. And I like to cut my sandwiches in half when I make them. And she just picks up my plate and takes a bite, chews it, eats the whole half. And I've had to make her 3 sandwiches thus far this week. It's her new obsession.
But be careful, because I'm pretty sure those, I mean, also the pills, but
I think it was the pills and the fried chicken, buddy.
Yeah. He didn't die of a potassium overdose on the toilet.
The weirdest thing to me is, like, we all know this information about Elvis. We all know that he liked peanut butter and banana sandwiches, took a shit ton of pills, and died on the pooper. Why do we know that? Because I feel like I know that because so many kids' cartoons when we were growing up had no problem bringing up those facts all the time about Elvis. Like, I feel like if you watch an Animaniacs episode, it's like, yeah, here's our Elvis drawing. And it's like a big fat guy eating a peanut butter and banana sandwich and then like dying on the crapper. Like,
I could win a trivia game based on the tragedies of Elvis's life. But if somebody's like, Elvis Presley is famously known as the King of Rock, named 5 songs now, I would lose.
Oh, I could do it. I could do it. Oh man, here we go.
Oh, we know you could. I got Jailhouse Rock and Blue Suede Shoes or Blue Christmas. Blue Christmas, okay. That's the two.
Okay, I won't even take those. Don't Be Cruel, Can't Help Falling in Love with You, Heartbreak Hotel, Don't Be Cruel, Teddy Bear. Boom!
Congratulations, Matt, you are lonely.
I'm moving to Kansas. That'll make more sense if you listen to the re-rental episode. But yeah, so this is a fun movie. I definitely wish that this movie had more of an audience, because it is just a good, and again, I mean, I say this all the fucking time, but blissfully short, under 90 minutes, just in and out. It does take a bit to get to the kills, but I think that the movie's goofy enough leading up to that.
It takes a bit to get to the movie.
Yeah.
It is 3 minutes of a moon.
The opening, if you need to hit the skip button at all, the opening credits is a prime time for that, because it is a static shot of the moon, which... I remember at one point when I was writing the screenplay for Describing the Moon, that was supposed to be how our opening credits would be. And now that I've seen that in action, I don't think that would have been a smart idea to entice people to watch the rest of the movie.
If you ever decided to finish it, what the opening credit should be is you just get a bunch of little kids and you ask them to describe the moon, and it'll be an adorable way to start your drama.
Yeah.
That's actually quite clever, and I really hate the fact that that would work so well, because I have no desire to watch the film, because I mean, like, I love you, Matt, but I hate dramas so much that I don't want to feel those feelings.
It's not a drama.
Especially when I know
it's
the pain that they're...
It was a dramedy at best, but...
It was written after he watched Garden State,
yeah.
So it is a drama with some humor sprinkled in.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. I have 2 things to say before we get into double features, okay?
All right.
So the scene where, I don't remember anybody's names, obviously.
That's fine.
The guy who, I think he asks the girl from Sleepaway Camp 2, Emilio Estevez's sister, out. I think that they were supposed to go out or something. Or I can't remember. Or maybe it was the guy that was making out with the girl whose ex-boyfriend was like stalking the store. I don't know. But he goes, what stupid idiot put this... Oh, I did. And I like paused the movie and just considered how many times I've gotten upset in my life and blamed someone else for me placing something somewhere that I didn't remember. I'm like, where the fuck is my phone? Who put, oh, you know, like, that's just like me every day. It's so painful. So the other thing I want to talk about is the gotcha framed ending sucks so bad because it's like supposed to be like, aha, they're going to be framed for the murders. But like literally there's no way that the killer could have framed anybody forensically. Like once forensics comes in, they would see that there's like blood all over that dude. There's blood under his fingernails. There's probably his blood on other people from attacking them and getting hurt in the process. Like it would fall apart as soon as they brought in the forensics team. And so this movie, like, I've been thinking a lot about this because I've been watching a lot of 2020 horror movies and trying to get through my list before the end of the year. And I don't know if we need gotcha endings in every fucking horror movie.
I put so much of a blame on the original Carrie. I feel like ending that movie with the hand jumping out of the grave and giving everybody this jump scare to send them home on built this like tone in horror films where there has to be a big... Like, it can't just have a happy ending. There has to be something. They have to get framed, or there has to... The monster's not really dead, or, like, ooh, this person's getting attacked at the very last second. Like, it really kind of makes it where it's like, well, that's more expected than a happy ending anymore. So, like, if you actually just gave me a happy ending, I'd be like, huh, I didn't see that coming.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't always have to be like, oh, they died in the very end, or something, like, really bad happened. When I talk about my movie this for the week, I'll get to that. It's kind of why it's been on my mind, but I just don't know. It feels like since it's expected, it loses the impact. Like, I think that the end of every horror movie could and maybe should have something that makes you think, but it doesn't have to be like, they did it, they killed everyone, or like Jason jumping out of the jumping onto the boat in the end of the original Friday the 13th. Yeah. Stuff like that, you know, like...
I'm all about a good... We make the joke, the referencing joke, but I'm all about a good-for-her ending. You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah!
Like, those are fun.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey...
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, oh, the practical effects. And also the male gaze.
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscover Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
But yeah, so while you're talking about what did you watch this week, obviously there's one step that we need to get to before that. So let's talk about some double features. So my double feature, it's kind of a weird one, but there's a lot that this movie kind of has in common with Black Christmas. And I obviously we're discussing
the original?
Yeah, the original Black Christmas. And we're obviously discussing this in December, so it just makes even more sense for us to talk about, to put on Black Christmas after this.
Dude, I have no problem putting on Black Christmas anytime between November 24th and December 24th. Like, that movie is always a Christmas movie for me. Like, you know, some people are like, I gotta watch Die Hard because it's after Thanksgiving. And I'm like, I gotta watch Black Christmas because that's one of the greatest horror movies of all time.
It really is. It is such a standout movie. But that is my double feature for Intruder.
Brian, why don't you go, buddy?
I will pick a movie in honor of my friend Scott. So I want to watch a movie, a slasher movie in a store. And this store for a grocery store was really big. Like the basement and everything. I was like, man, this is a really big store. What's I wish there was a word for a really big store. There is. It's called mall. So I would watch this with Chopping Mall.
You
and text
son
Scott.
Of a bitch.
Was that yours?
That was going to be mine. I was like, I got this one in the bag. Shit, fuck. Well, then I would pick, god damn.
There's a less superior one that's my pick that also takes place in a store, and it happened after a night with something in space.
What are you talking about?
Night of the Comet.
Oh, Night of the Comet. Oh, yeah, dude. You could, yeah, basically anything that's in a mall. You could do, like, Dawn of the Dead. You could do, I mean, nobody really wants to watch Dawn of the Dead. Like, that movie is so long. It's not Day of the Dead, though, but, you know, like, I don't know. As your double feature, I feel like Dawn of the Dead is a real hard, hard one to add in. But let's go with, I don't know, maybe, like, Return of the Living Dead, because it's in a warehouse.
All right.
And perfect. You know, like, I'll go with that. You know, like, if I really can't pick Shopping Mall, because if I was being a real brat, I would be like, well, you can pick Shopping Mall, I'll pick Killbots. It's the same fucking movie, just a different name. But yeah, let's just say I'll go with Return of the Living Dead. Can't go wrong.
All right. So the what did I watch this week? I actually didn't watch anything that I want to talk about on the show, but this is coming out in December. I already mentioned Christmas once, and hey, guess who has a new podcast? This guy, Christmas 365. It's me and a former guest, Dylan, talking about Christmas. So go and check that out. It's a bunch of our friends geeking out about Christmas. We've got friends of the show, including Joey from Dark Hills Events, Joe from Fright School. Obviously, Dylan is doing the show. And, you know, Marissa from Jersey Ghouls is going to pop up in there eventually. There'll be plenty of people that you're like, hey, I remember them from Horror Movie Night. I wonder what their thoughts are on Christmas time. Well, we've got a show for you. So go check out Christmas 365.
I haven't listened to any of it yet. I don't have special privileges because Matt's my brother. But I will say anyone that is, I'm going to just make an assumption. Anyone that is feeling sad, just having a rough day, find whatever episode Joe from Sprite School, because getting Joe to talk about something like Christmas will just melt anyone's heart. And I can promise that. Not saying all the other guests would be great. I'm excited to hear them. But Joe has just got such a Christmas vibe. I don't know what it is.
But I'm done with my pitch. You guys can go ahead and talk about, you know, the movies that you've watched.
Well, I want to bring up two things. They kind of feed into my complaint about the very end of Intruder, which is really not a complaint. It's because, like, when this movie came out, it was much fresher of a concept, you know? Relatively fresher. It's been, you know, 30 years. I would say that the gotcha ending of the movies that we, you know, that we watch, it's a little tiring, but I think that it can be done well. Did I talk about rewatching Stonehurst Asylum with Megan?
No.
Man, that movie's so good. That movie is just that's such a great movie for Megan and I to watch because it's a little bit dark, it's a little bit violent, it's a period piece, and it's got Jim Sturgess in it, and Megan's got a huge crush on Jim Sturgess. Such a good movie, never gonna get to talk about it on this show. But it's got a gotcha ending that I like because that gotcha ending feels very Victorian. But then I also watched one of my 2020 movies that I watched was Sputnik from, it's a Russian film. Have you heard about it?
No.
No.
I went deep, deep into what's being released this year as I am wont to do in late November, early December to catch anything that I didn't give a chance to beforehand. Sputnik caught my eye because it's a creature feature. It's supposed to be Russia in 1993, I believe, and these astronauts come back down from space and, you know, an alien comes with them, obviously. I'm not giving much away by that because it's a well-tread story. It's actually in Russian. Like, I watched it with subtitles and I appreciated that because it felt like it wasn't an American movie, you know, like it felt like it had a very different style and just a, you know, it wasn't over the top like a lot of American horror is. And that's fine. Like, I like that too, but it was a nice change of pace. But Sputnik also has kind of a gotcha ending, but it's done in a very interesting way. It's kind of a positive ending, but it still has that like, aha, at the very end. So I would recommend if you have an hour and 50 minutes, it's long. I think it might have been an hour and 50 minutes or something like that, or maybe an hour and 45. But it's kind of a slow burn. It's more of a character study. It's small cast. I think that there were maybe five main characters. There are other, you know, like extras, but, you know, five characters that really spoke most of the time. And some pretty good creature effects. So, you know, it's nothing that you haven't seen before, but it was a cool take, and it takes place, like I said, in 1993 in this Soviet research facility, so it's got a very Stranger Things kind of vibe to it. I'd recommend it.
Brian, how about you? Last one.
Okay, I'm also going to do some self-promotion for a podcast that I have coming out this month. It talks about the whole basis is we're looking into capitalism behind holidays and the negative evil side of Christmas. It's called Christmas 666, and it'll be on Spotify. No, I don't have much to talk about. I've been trying to hold off until I finish the season, but I can't because I just – it just has been my highlight, and I always forget that it comes out on Fridays, and then it's out. And I just like – I've been really enjoying Mandalorian season 2.
Oh, I'm waiting until it's over to talk about it. But man, oh man.
I know, I'm enjoying it so much.
The only thing that we hate about it is that it's like half hour episodes.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, the episodes are way shorter this season.
But they set you up. It was 55 minutes. Episode 1, 55. Episode 2, 45. Last night was 35. And I'm like, you can't keep doing this to me.
You're
going to
be a 10-minute episode in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. So that was Intruder from 1989 as picked by me. Next week, we're going to talk about crime, zombie crime, with Scott's pick. So strap in for that. And we'll be back with new episodes of the show every single Thursday night or Friday morning, depending on what time zone you live in. And hop over to Patreon, patreon.com/HMMpodcast for our little conversation, maybe like 10 minutes, talking about weird locations for slasher movies. Thanks for supporting us, guys. Bye.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
It is mind-blowing.
And heartbreaking.
How many original scripts are written every year but are never made?
So we seek out these scripts and bring them to life with full audio production and professional actors.
Check us out at Undiscovered Scripts.
Movies made of paper.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Free!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.